WPFW, Washington.
I'm gonna do.
The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. One should, for example, be able to see that things are hopeless and yet be determined to make them otherwise. F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Dialogue.
Good evening. Welcome to Dialogue, the only radio show on WPFW that brings in radio hosts from three other radio shows to come in here to talk about the issues of the day. We're here every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. I'm Mark Levine, host of The Inside Scoop, and sitting with me is Terry Kester, the host of What's at Stake, and Garland Nixon, the host of The Edge. The topic today is marriage equality in D.C. And also sitting with me is the president of the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club, Jeff Richardson. Massachusetts was the first state to allow marriage equality in 2004, and after then it seems it's growing at an increasing geometric pace. We had Connecticut 2 years later, followed actually California, then Connecticut. Then in 2008, the voters in California voted to take away marriage equality. That's still up before the California Supreme Court. And then last week, it seems it's going even quicker. There was the Iowa Supreme Court for that state. The Vermont legislature voted by an astounding 2/3 in the Vermont House and 87% in the Vermont Senate to override the Republican governor's veto and allow marriage equality in that state. Also last week, fast on the heels of Iowa and Vermont, was the D.C. City Council, which voted to allow marriages in other states of gay couples to be recognized right here in the District of Columbia. So is now the time for the District of Columbia to go one step further, to have full marriage equality? New York also accepts out-of-state gay couples, but it introduced a bill the governor has to allow full marriage equality in that state. New Jersey, New Hampshire, and Maine are around the corner. Soon, in a couple of years, I expect every state northeast of New Jersey to have marriage equality. And I had the distinct privilege of being at the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club last night to facilitate a discussion led by Jeff Richardson, the president, whereby that club for the first time said that now is the time for marriage equality in D.C. Jeff Richardson, why is now the time? I assume that many in your organization have supported marriage equality for quite some time. Why is now the time?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me tonight, Mark, and it's great to be a part of the panel. I think, as you said, you know, looking at on the heels of what is happening across the country, when you look at the accomplishments that have been made in regards to, particularly when you look at a state like Iowa, you know, passing marriage equality, and then when you look at the District of Columbia, which is, you know, historically known to be very progressive leaning, and also to have one of the strongest, when you look at domestic partnership laws in the country, why not now? And when you look at the fact that we've been building over time, you look at the work that has been done, you look at the laws that have been passed on the city council, you look at even last year, the expansion of the domestic partner benefits that were passed last year, many within the community locally are saying, if not now, when? And so, you know, there's a strong outcry across the community, and we are very excited to see in the direction that we're going.
Now, Jeff, of course, D.C. has a distinct disadvantage in relation to the 50 states. Unlike the 50 states who can pass a law and it's law, Congress oversees everything that D.C. does. And sometimes when the district's elected representatives make a decision on behalf of the people of D.C., Congress steps in and overturns it. Are you afraid of that this time?
Well, I think there is some concern about that, and I think that's why you saw with the vote of the city council in regards to recognizing marriages from other jurisdictions. In many ways, you know, it's sort of test ground. We shall see if there even is congressional involvement and how Congress responds to the district moving forward with this legislation. But I think that also one of the things that we have to realize in the district, and we see it now, I think with the voting rights legislation, at any point in time, Congress can intervene. And I think at some point in time, residents of the District of Columbia, and I think we're starting to realize it, we have to stand up and say we want self-determination, whether it's voting rights in the, whether it's voting rights, you know, whether it's when we talk about budget autonomy or whether it's marriage equality. And so no matter what the issue is, Congress can intervene. And so I think that, you know, this is just one another issue. And I think that we as a community have to stand up for self-determination in, here in the district.
Garland, let me ask you, do you think now is the time?
Well, I guess it'll be determined. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, it certainly appears as though that's what's happening. That's what's going on now, and that America is ready for that. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't see a major problem with
it. Are the people in the district ready for it? I mean, America's one thing. I mean, the Mississippians are not ready.
Iowans.
People from Vermont are ready. Well, what about people in the district?
I think definitely people in the district in all likelihood are, because it is generally progressive leaning. I did have one question I want to throw out there, because I was talking with someone today about this issue, and they said, and this was like kind of thrown in my direction. And I thought, well, that's something I might want. This is something I want to ask you about, and that is this. What we were discussing today was the issue of gay marriage. One issue being the, of course, all of the legal restrictions of two people not being able to be married. You know, the things that you can't get, everything from what's left behind to hospital, the whole nine yards, the legal aspects, the technical, administrative, legal aspects, number one, versus the societal, social issue of marriage. Okay, so then the question is there, why would there be a, what is the advantage of saying, I'm trying to find a way to word this in the way that it was given me, that the discussion was, and basically the two things. Let's say the district said, look, every single thing that you get legally and administratively, if you're married, is awarded as a civil union or whatever you call it, as opposed to the actual term marriage. What is the difference, and why go towards marriage?
Great question.
As a term, as a word.
This is a great question. I think many people ask that. You know, in the District of Columbia, we are very close. When you look at what's covered under what's off under domestic partner benefits, we are very close. I think the big thing about it, this is a human rights issue. Mm-hmm. It's a true equality issue, and I think it's an issue of separate but equal, in the sense that, you know, we can't say, taking the stance and saying that, you know, one particular relationship, you know, same-gendered relationship is as equal, you know, as other relationships, and that they have an equal stake in our society and should be granted equal rights. I do think that, I mean, in many ways, it is a philosophical issue.
Yes.
It is, you know, but it is a human rights issue, the fact that we all, you know, are created equal, and we are all, you know, we stand under the Constitution and available to the same rights as everyone else.
I would argue it's also a legal issue. One of the things that, you know, we learned from the Civil Rights Generation is that separate but equal, apart from being morally unfair, it doesn't work legally.
Right.
It's never quite equal. One of the things that Thurgood Marshall, I think, brilliantly brought up to the Supreme Court in the several cases leading up to Brown versus Board of Education is that no matter how much you try to make separate but equal equal, it just doesn't work. You just can't give all those rights. And one of the reasons is that the federal law is based on the word marriage.
Right.
And states' recognition of other states is based on the word marriage. So even if D.C. were to offer everything to the citizens of D.C., if they were to move across the border to Virginia or Maryland, they wouldn't have the same rights as a straight couple. Terry, you haven't gotten in on this conversation. What are your thoughts?
I'm loud on the outside. Inside, I'll talk on the outside. Is my mic on? That doesn't sound like it to me,
but
I hope it
is. It is on.
Can you guys hear me? That's what's really important. All right. I'm wondering about the pushback. I mean, you mentioned Congress, and that's, to me, this country is so divided on the issue. The fact, you know, that Iowa and five, six other states, whatever, you know, have accepted it doesn't mean that Congress in any way at all is going to. Partially because of what Garland was talking about and the marriage term, which is not just a legal term, but it also for a lot of people obviously is a spiritual term and has a spiritual connection. So then you can get into a sort of a church and state kind of situation. But I would love to see this happen and love to see it happen nationwide, but I have dealt with, as all of us have here, with the religious right, which is it's like we're in sort of a lull right now, which is maybe why now is the best time. But I wonder how prepared you guys are, and women, you know, how you prepared you are for a huge pushback once it gets into the Congress and Congress's ears.
Jeff, are you prepared for pushback from Congress?
That's the big question. We're getting prepared. I mean, I think, you know, across the city, I think some of, even within the LGBT community, there has been division on that question. Are we ready? You know, obviously, you know, most within the LGBT community, majority, you know, are supportive and want, you know, equal rights. But the question is, can we fend off congressional intervention? Can we fend off a well-funded campaign, you know, from the right? And that's the question. We have a lot of work to do in the District of Columbia. And I think there is a grassroots campaign that is being built and is moving forward. Gertrude Stein Democratic Club is proud to be a part of that. Last night, our community forum was just was a launch for our members to have a discussion, but it was also the launch of what we see as a community-wide discussion. And we'll be moving forward within all 8 ward organizations in the District of Columbia over the next month and a half, having that intense discussion with local activists and citizens about marriage equality. But we do have a lot of work to do. We have a lot to do around coalition building. We have a lot of barriers to cross. As we know, you know, there hasn't been a lot of outreach done in African-American community and Latino community. And we have to begin to really build those coalitions and have some of that open, frank conversation. I mean, many do think that because the District of Columbia has been so supportive, you know, of the past, in the past, locally, when you look at the LGBT community.
And it's important to point out the most recent thing was passed unanimously, which is interesting. Every single one of the 15 members of the D.C. City Council.
Yeah, the 13. The 12, except for Marion Barry, because he wasn't present.
Oh, okay. All right.
But all 12 present voted unanimously. And made, you know, really strong comments that, you know, this was well overdue. So we hope that that level of support will continue from our elected officials. I know that, you know, we are waiting to see how Congress and if Congress responds and what happens. And that will sort of give us the clue as to how we move forward. But we are beginning to build, hopefully, you know, a citywide campaign and via starting discussions as we speak.
Let me follow up on that a little bit. Strategically, are you getting pushback from other lesbian and gay organizations around the country in other states? I mean, because, you know, what's happening if this goes through is it becomes a national issue.
It's already a national issue.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, really a national on this, as opposed to if you're struggling for it in Missouri.
You mean a federal issue.
Yeah. Okay.
I think there's some concern. We had a couple folks at the forum last night, and again, it was, you know, Mark facilitated a very open forum where, you know, quite a bit of different opinions were shared. There are some people that are concerned about what will the impact of this, because it is the District of Columbia, the nation's capital, be on the national agenda, and particularly the national LGBT agenda. When we look at, you know, when we look at ENDA, we look at hate crimes legislation. There's concern about that. To this point, there hasn't been a lot of open dialogue from national organizations and from some of the national partners about that. I think, you know, all eyes are on D.C. in many ways to see what happens and how this moves forward.
I want to bring up an issue with regard to Congress. All of you in this room know I used to work in Congress for Congressman Barney Frank, actually, and the House Judiciary Committee. And one of the things that I don't think a lot of people realize is that Congress is not an organization where a majority gets its way. I mean, people study in their textbooks a majority of the House and a majority of the Senate, and the president passes a law. Throw that out. That's not how it works. Let me tell you how it works if you don't know. In the House, the majority party sets the agenda. What that means is, and in fact, the Republicans did it too, unless they had a majority of Republicans on board, things didn't even get a vote.
Yep.
So it didn't matter whether you had 90% of Democrats and 40% of Republicans on board. When the Republicans were in charge, they didn't allow it to come to a vote. Nancy Pelosi, and it's not just her, there's others in the Democratic leadership, but it's primarily her, the Speaker of the House, has more power than anyone else there, and she basically decides the agenda. That doesn't mean that she doesn't listen to other people and take their views into consideration. Of course, Nancy Pelosi represents San Francisco, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, she has come out in favor of marriage equality, not specifically for D.C., but in general. Is that right?
My understanding of that is that she isn't, and even more important, you know, particularly in regards to the District of Columbia, she has come out being very vocal in regards to the District of Columbia having the right to, you know, to pass our own legislations and to have self-determination.
Right. So there's two answers here.
There's two issues.
One is the question of marriage equality. The other is whether the elected representatives of the District of Columbia should have the right to represent their people, or whether Congress is going to go in and overturn the will of the duly elected representative. So the point I wanted to make is that nothing gets through the House without Nancy Pelosi at least implicitly agreeing. There is one backdoor procedure, which we want to get into. We can, too. But basically, it's her choice. The Senate's a little bit more free. But the only way, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, the only way that Congress could overturn the decision of the duly elected representatives of the District of Columbia, should they vote for marriage equality, is you would need a bill to pass the House, a bill to pass the Senate, and to be signed by President Obama. And if you don't get all three, it's not overturned. Is that right, Jeff?
That is my understanding. To overturn a law that's been passed and signed in the District of Columbia, but we know in the past what has been done in regards to the way of getting around that is to hit us with our budget. And to hold up our budget and and attach riders there. And so I think, as always, that's some of the major concern. Congress, our delegate to Congress, Eleanor Holmes Norton, hopefully soon to be Representative Norton, has said when, the council passed the vote for recognition of marriages from other jurisdictions, that she believes she can fight off, any influence. And we hope that will stand. Again, this will some way be a test ground and see how Congress responds.
And the case that's just happened now, D.C. recognizing other states' marriages, is sort of a test case. If Congress is okay with that, you think you can press forward more on marriage equality?
Some feel that way. Some feel that way, and some have said and discussed that, depending upon what happens with the voting rights legislation, that, if not now, when? We need to move forward. We cannot continue to wait. We can't continue to say that, D.C. deserves self-determination, and we're not willing to sort of fight for that right to pass our own, laws, and not willing to press the issue. So there are those that are out there that are saying now.
Go ahead, Carl.
A question I had is this. I don't know if you guys, I imagine you've looked into it, but as you know, there's some more issues regarding the voting rights coming before the Supreme Court. Regarding how Congress overseeing the Voting Rights Act under the 14th Amendment. But whatever the case, that's going to be, I believe, in April. It's coming before the Supreme Court. In any way, do you see any way where this will affect what's going on here?
That has been some concern. We don't think so. We don't think, particularly in regards to, the council's vote to recognize marriages from other jurisdictions. At this point, when you see what's been done, with the gun amendment, it's like, well, what else, can they do when you look at such a serious issue? So the belief is that that particular legislation will not, have the impact. But again, we don't know down the road. The reality is we don't know. And many are saying, well, if we don't move forward, we will never know. We have to begin to do the groundwork and to educate folks in the district and to mobilize people and to be prepared for whatever may come.
Now, this would not be dialogue if we didn't invite our listeners to say their two cents on this question. The number is 202-488-0- excuse me. Why did I say four?
588.
That's important. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. If you have a view on whether D.C. should have marriage equality, are you for it? Are you against it? Do you think you're for it, but maybe now's not the right time? What is your view on D.C. marriage equality? Give us a call, and we will take your calls.
And while we wait, let me throw another question at you, Jeff. What is the reaction to this on the street, and particularly in the black community? And I mention that only because even talking about homosexuality on the air, particularly with black males, has been, almost verboten. It's very, very recent that this kind of conversation could even be held, which is showing some significant progress. Mm-hmm. But on the street, in the community itself, are you getting support as well?
The campaign is really sort of just launching and beginning, and we really think that we're looking forward to seeing the response in the community as we go across the city with these community discussions. But we know that there will be some pushback, and there is some reservation. But this is an opportunity for us to have a conversation about same-sex couples and LGBT people in general in the District of Columbia like we've never had. And we need to have it for a variety of reasons. Outside of marriage equality, there are a lot of issues. And you start talking about African-American community, we could go on a whole, we could have
about
a whole
the down
show.
Low for,
we
for
could
an
have
hour.
A whole show dedicated to that. Yeah. But we need to have this conversation. And so this issue, marriage equality, and this particular, legislation that was passed, from the council, recognized measure of the jurisdictions, has provided us with the opportunity to start to have that conversation. We know there's going to be some pushback. We know there's going to be some reservation. But regardless, we need to have the conversation.
Well, let me ask you just briefly on that point, because there's a lot of discussion about the down low in the African-American community, particularly gay men, it's usually referred to, who are pretending to be straight, who are trying to live straight lives, many of them having unprotected sex and increasing AIDS rates. Would marriage equality help in that regard?
Would marriage equality help in regard?
Would it help in regard to acceptance of homosexuality in the African American community, so that gay people feel free not to live closeted lives?
You know, that's a good question.
That's one of those theoretical questions.
Hopefully, we will find out. I think that hopefully, what this whole discussion and marriage equality being put sort of front and center will allow us to do is to have a conversation and begin to have a dialogue that makes people more comfortable with, to accept their sexuality and be willing to come out and live their lives. I think that's the biggest thing. I don't necessarily think that, because there is some division when we talk about marriage equality, and particularly, I had dinner with some friends a couple weeks ago, predominantly African American. And for a lot of folks, marriage equality isn't the number one issue on their list. They're supportive and they want their rights. But when you start talking about the litany of issues, that are there, whether it be healthcare, jobs, it's like, okay, we want to fight for it, but there's some other things there as well. So in that respect, I don't think necessarily that will have an impact on increasing African-American men, gay men coming out, the down low thing. But I do think that it creates the opportunity for us to start to have a conversation and folks to feel more comfortable with talking about sexuality in general and talking about, gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender question, folks, that then may help deal with that issue and make people more comfortable and feel as there is a community for them.
Yeah. And the thing to keep in mind, I was with the ACLU for years, and we did a lot of different things regarding, religion and of course, sexual preference and all that kind of stuff. And one thing you find is traditionally the African American community is much more socially conservative than is perceived by most people, because they vote Democratic, they vote left, but they're very often, because of religion, you find the African American, do the numbers on the death penalty and things like that, and many times they're much more socially conservative than most people who watch political voters.
Than most Democrats would be, say.
Right. The other thing is, and I think I look at one thing a little bit differently, and that is that one thing that we were talking about was being able to talk about this issue and talking about this issue more. And I would say this, and this is from noticing what's going on with President Obama. What I've noticed is, as when an African American became president with a lot of serious issues, it was just the opposite. People stopped talking about race. Isn't it, in a way, what I think is better is when people stop talking about it, because there's no reason to talk about it. Clearly, if you look at the list of what would be considered left-wing issues over the past 200 years, the bottom line is this. Like every other left-wing issues, 50, 60 years later, people look back and say, can you believe we thought like that?
Right. Can you believe we had different water fountains? Can you believe that gay people weren't allowed to get married when straight people were?
Right. All of these issues, 50 years later, people, it's like Dennis Kucinich. Everybody always looks back and says, gee, he was right. We shouldn't have invaded Iraq. Those types of things.
Right.
So
right.
I think basically what I'm saying is, when you're not talking about it.
Let me go to a caller. When it's no longer an issue. We got a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller.
Evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Yes. I feel a little bit inspired to, expose or not expose, but to augment the scope of the conversation. I think that to look at this in terms of purely legally, as Mr. Levine was saying, that it's a matter, in my estimation, to be one of contract, one of probate, one of chancery, purely economic. It also has overtones that lend themselves to upward mobility and employability of gays versus the larger population, and one of pecuniary interest between two people or between two entities. I mean, especially with the fact that corporate personhood these days, of course, that's certainly tangential to the matter, but personhood.
Let me ask Jeff about the economic impact, because you raised pecuniary matters.
Sure, and if you don't mind if he does that, but I can make one more quick point about black gays versus white gays.
Okay, hold that thought for a second. Jeff, what is the economic impact of allowing gay couples to marry?
Last night we had the pleasure of having someone from the Williams Institute, which has done a study looking at the potential economic impact, and I'm not an economist, and I don't know it through and through, But, you know, potentially from just rough estimates, I mean, there looked like there to be, you know, a plus, you know, in regards to for the District of Columbia when you look at the potential of same-sex couples and particularly targeting those who, you know, regular tourists, you know, and they had some particular targeted states in the region who are likely to move to the district because of that. And you start looking at the folks who then, you know, looking at opportunities.
And
for
just marriage, you know, that brings in a lot of people. That's dance halls and flowers, and marriages are expensive things. But actually, in terms of the couples themselves, I think that marriage is a way out of poverty for a lot of people. And, you know, it's there's things like you get health care benefits from your employer,
well,
you get Social Security benefits, disability benefits.
Fact. It's a sociological fact. When marriage exists, or you know, whichever, gay or straight, there is a social stability that is undeniable, and that social stability leads to economic stability.
Caller, you had a point on black gays versus white gays.
Go ahead. I was thinking that you know, there's an economic disparity. I would think from one looking at it objectively and one looking at it subjectively, that there's a difference between blacks and whites. On the straight side of the fence, as well as on the gay side, and the fact that I think that to be black and gay poses a double indemnity, as opposed to being white and gay. I don't know what your position is on that.
Well, you may not know from listening to him, but Jeff Richardson is black and gay, and not that it's necessarily relevant, but since you raise it on your question.
Well, then you can answer my question.
Right, since you can't see him on the radio.
What's wrong with this broadcast?
They can't see him on the radio.
These mics are terrible.
Jeff, why don't you answer that question from your personal experience and from what you know as president of the club?
Well, I think definitely, you know, you are correct. I mean, there tends to be a major cultural difference, and then also even when we look sort of in the District of Columbia, and it varies, but there is a, you know, an economic difference, and I think that some of what we were talking about earlier about the down low, you know, issue. I mean, there is some additional barrier there, you know, socially. And
I would think black gays face both racism in the gay community and homophobia in the African American community.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And so it's a difficult one. I mean, it is a difficult one. I mean, when you look at just what folks already, you know, feel.
And so what my main point was that if you're facing those two dimensions of headwind, you know, not being able to get ahead or whatever, it affects all of the other areas: contract, probate, economics, employment, upward mobility.
Oh, yes.
You know, your tax status, everything, your ability to obtain and secure your property. You know, the same things that you would be exposed to as a black man if you were straight are doubled, or maybe at least by one half increased if you're gay and black.
Oh yeah. No, I would totally agree. And then, you know, and it's, you know, even beyond that, we start talking about the transgender community.
Right. You know, they have it even worse. I mean,
particularly
that's even
in regards
harder.
To, you know, the economics of it and just being able to be gainfully employed
right.
and the barriers that they face.
I think that depends on how close to Hollywood you are, because a lot of them play well.
Maybe so. Maybe they can be gainfully employed. RuPaul, well, he's not transgender. Hey, thanks for your call,
Colin.
I appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break at the bottom of the hour. I'll also give you a chance to call in. The number's 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We'll be right back after this.
This is Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World, inviting you to attend two major events. Report Card on Obama, a national town hall meeting on the eve of President Obama's first 100 days. Friday, April 24th, 7 o'clock p.m. at the New York Avenue Presbyterian Church, 1313 New York Avenue Northwest. Congressman John Conyers, Dr. Ronald Walters, Dr. E. Faye Williams, and Arlene Holt Baker are among the panelists for this event. And a benefit fundraising reception, The Curious Case of Dr. Ron Daniels, a celebration of my 39th birthday. Again, immediately following the town hall meeting, with special guests Hakeem Adabudi, Joe Madison, and Verna Avery Brown. Free and open to the public, the contributions will be accepted. For further information, call 202-745-2999. That's 202-745-2999. Or visit the website, reportcardonobama.com.
Welcome back to Dialogue. I am Mark Levine, sitting here with Terry Kester and Garland Nixon, and our special guest today, Jeff Richardson. He is the president of the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club. Jeff, what is the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club?
The Gertrude Stein Democratic Club is actually one of the oldest and largest LGBT Democratic clubs in the country, and is the LGBT, if I may so, political voice here in the District of Columbia. We were founded in 1976.
I'm guessing by Gertrude Stein.
Yeah. Well, named after Gertrude.
Okay.
After Gertrude Stein.
All right.
All right. We're talking about marriage equality in the District of Columbia and whether it should happen, whether the time, and if it should happen, whether it is the right time. One of the things that Terry brought up in the last half hour was the religious backlash, the backlash from the religious right. And the religious right isn't always, you know, James Dobson, Republican Party. There are pastors right here in the District of Columbia that certainly are not in favor of marriage equality. What do you think any of us need to do to reach out to religious people who don't agree with it on a religious basis, that maybe they believe in fairness for gay people on a civil basis? They don't want gay people married in their church, but is there a chance that they might allow people who aren't of their church to have marriage equality?
I think so. I think, again, there's a lot of work that has to be done. And I think that, you know, when it comes to, you know, houses, you know, of faith and religious, you know, the religious community and the faith community, it's a very personal thing. And I think those conversations, and part of what we have to do is begin to get, you know, LGBT folks, you know, more comfortable and willing to have those conversations, you know, with the leaders of their faith community, because those are the, you know, those are the folks, those are their constituents, and those are the people that they're going to respond to, and those are the people that they have the personal relationship with. You know, I can go in and we can sort of have the political discussion, but it's really hard to move somebody beyond, you know, when you start talking about their faith and their spiritual
right.
beliefs, their moral stance. But when you have a personal relationship with somebody, when someone comes and shares their story and you know that person, they're sort of talking to you from a compelling place about why this is important for their lives and how they unpack, then we begin to hear and listen. And so that's one of the things we're really, you know, encouraging our community, the LGBT community, and the diversity that we are, African-American, Latino, transgender, to begin to, you know, step up and, you know, folks sitting in houses of worship across the district, you know, across the district, to begin to have those conversations. And, you know, as a friend of mine likes to say, we have to come out every day. You know, and
to be clear, the D.C. marriage equality law that you seek to pass would not change the right of churches, synagogues, mosques to refuse to marry gay couples within that faith tradition if that's what they so choose.
No, the there's no legislation currently that has been introduced, but the legislation that has possibly been talked about and proposed would not impact upon.
Right. It only affects civil marriage, not religious marriage.
No, that's correct. Only good for scare tactics for their own.
Well, and the religious right uses it.
Well,
the kind of thing
that's
use.
The reality. Oh, yeah. And that's right. why we have to reach out and we have to start the conversation. We have to get, you know, the word out and explain, you know, what's happened. We had Councilmember David Catania, Jim Graham, and Phil Mendelson at the forum last night, you know, really going through and explaining, one, what the legislation, you know, recognizing marriages from other jurisdictions really did, which is clarify existing D.C. law.
Right.
You know, that was already passed and in place. And we, as we move forward, we have to continue to have clear dialogue and explain that, because folks will come in and distort. And we know that's always the case and use the fear tactics. And
right.
so we have to be prepared with a clear message and really explain and how it will impact all sectors, you know, of our community.
So in other words, you have to explain what it is, but you have to also, unfortunately, proving a negative, you also have to explain what it's not.
Exactly. You definitely.
We've got Walter on the line. Walter, welcome to Dialogue.
Hi. I'm a resident of Tennessee, though I work in Maryland, and there's a couple things on whether this is the right time I'd like to mention. I think it's a great learning moment for the status of the District of Columbia and the rest of the country, that the right to self-determination, whatever the issue is, and as a gay man in a long-term relationship, I think it's also a great learning lesson in the 40th anniversary year of Stonewall for this issue to surface.
Walter, let me ask you, if you don't mind, a somewhat personal question. You don't have to answer if you don't want to. But how would marriage – you said you were in a long-term relationship. How would the right to marry your partner of many years, how would that affect your life?
Well, as my companion would say, it's the right not to marry if I choose to.
Absolutely.
But at this point, there's not a choice one way or the other. And we've been together for 33 years – and we've got all kinds of legal rights we put into contract law, but they have no meaning. Whether if he has hospital visits and whether I control, we've got the paperwork, but if anyone wants to challenge that in the state of Tennessee, they can do it in a moment and exclude it and not recognize our long-term relationship.
Walter gives a great example. He's been together with his partner for 33 years. I wish straight marriages would last as long as that. Some have, many have, but not all of them.
But talk about stability, responsibility, sharing, caring. I mean, you know, what more can you ask of any human relationship than what Walter is representing right at this moment?
Yeah. And what that stability brings to a community. I mean, yeah, you know, when we talk about what that stability brings to a community, when we talk about family and we talk about, you know, family units and how that, you know, helps support a community in so many different ways. It's so important. I love, Walter, that you use – I love, like, a great learning moment, because it is a great learning moment. And I have to sort of, you know, quote-unquote, give a shout-out in some ways to our elected officials in the city council and our chairman of the city council, Vincent Gray, because I think they recognize that. And as sort of they move forward – with our struggle on voting rights and self-determination, and even the, you know, intensify our conversation here locally at statehood, it is the opportunity to learn for a learning moment, and nationally, and for folks to put the issues of the District of Columbia and our lack of self-determination on the national radar.
Walter, you got something more?
No, that's all. I'm also the executive director of the National Organizers Alliance, so I'd like to send that along to President Obama when this reaches his table, that organizers can stand up to.
Well, thank you very much for your
call.
Thank
you, Walter.
Walter, we really appreciate it. We've got Jim on the line. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much, everybody. I really wanted to congratulate you all for the effort that is moving forward there. I'm calling from Chicago, but, you know, I put many years in D.C., and it's just so good to know that things are happening. And I just wanted to echo Walter's sentiment. First of all, this is, in fact, a great learning moment, and it's particularly a great learning moment in terms of what it does for the African-American community. It ratchets up the dialogue that people just don't want to have, and I think that's really necessary. You know, I ran for city council in D.C. in 1990 and was the first African-American gay man to run openly as a candidate for city council.
You're a brave man,
there.
Jim.
Yeah.
Yes, and he, you know, you're talking almost 20 years ago now.
You're a very brave man. Yeah.
And you know, I got a lot of mileage out of that, and it took me a long way, I have to say, and it had a lot of people really discussing, you know, what it means to be black and gay, not only in Washington, D.C., but also in the African-American community. And I think that if we're going to move ahead, we need to do what I think I hear and see you all doing, and that is that African-American lesbians, gays, transgenders are actually getting out in front on this discussion. And if that continues to happen that way, it's going to make a tremendous difference, you know, for people everywhere. So keep it up.
And all right, Jim, thank you.
And in fact, the power behind this movement, in all likelihood, is the self-determination part of it, because that's where you can drag people in. I don't want to say drag people. That's where you can attract people who may be ambivalent or people who may not be into supporting this movement or against it, but there are those out there who feel very strongly about the self-determination movement, and you get in a whole another group of people there.
And I would argue one of those people, Garland, is the most famous resident of the District of Columbia, President Obama. You know, the right likes to make a lot of fuss over what President Obama said in the campaign about being opposed to marriage equality. Now, of course, 10 years ago he said it as a state legislator.
Right.
He supported it. Many think it was a political position. But one thing that President Obama has made absolutely clear, and he did this in opposing Proposition 8 in California, is that each jurisdiction has the right to make these decisions on their own.
You don't mean states' rights, do you?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Done deal.
It's an old conservative concept.
Done deal.
Even John McCain didn't support the federal constitutional amendment to overturn the decision of the Massachusetts state, because he said, well, you know, that he disagrees with Massachusetts, but that's the right of Massachusetts. So I think we're going to bring in people, even those who may not support it,
yes,
who recognize it is the right of the people of the District of Columbia to decide through their elected representatives what the District of Columbia is going to decide in this regard.
So we're going all the way back to the Kansas and Nebraska Act and the right to decide whether you want slavery in your territory.
Well, you know, hopefully
I think we're getting back there.
You know, this isn't quite as extreme as that.
But I do think it's an important issue. One of the things that I was looking up, though, was the law on this matter. And one of the things I was concerned about was the possibility of a referendum because, of course, California had a proposition that overturned it. Now, I'm not saying that the voters of D.C. would do that. I happen to think, and one of the things I wanted to ask you, Jeff, was, and I'll get to you in just a second, is the poll numbers for the people in D.C. I'll get to that in a second. But one of the things that I don't like is when people vote on other people's rights. You know, in Alabama and Mississippi in the 1960s, the majority of Alabamans supported Jim Crow laws. The majority of Mississippians supported Jim Crow laws because the majority were white and the majority were racist. Let's face it. So I don't like when the majority votes on those rights. And one of the things I discovered, and I was looking this up on whether there could be a referendum, is you can't have a referendum in D.C. that violates the Human Rights Act. D.C. has its own sort of constitution. It's not quite like other state constitutions, but you do have a Human Rights Act, and the Human Rights Act specifically says that a government, specifically the government of D.C., cannot discriminate on the basis of sex or sexual orientation, and it says you can't have a referendum to overturn anything that would be in violation of the Human Rights Act. You can't have it on appropriations and some other things, too. So it seems like, unlike California, where the people can vote to overturn a minority's rights, you can't do that in D.C. And I was very proud to discover that. I didn't know that. I did some research on that.
Well, let me throw this in also, because this is when we did a lot of polling with the ACLU. What we found out was civil rights polling doesn't do very well. When it comes to civil rights, the main reason being, if you do a poll of 10,000 people and the majority of them are middle class white people, they're going to feel much less likely that the police are going to break in their house or going to search their children and things like that. So the majority feels less threatened that they'll have their civil rights infringed upon by the authorities, so they don't poll well. So many times issues such as this, when you go to the majority, well, the majority doesn't feel that it affects them, or they don't feel that they're going to be. It's not going to hurt me, so the heck with it.
It's a good thing we have a Constitution and a Bill of Rights. I remember there was a study in the 1950s in the McCarthy era where people were asked to sign a petition to approve the Bill of Rights. And they just laid out the First Amendment, Congress passes no law on religion, and you know the Fifth Amendment, you have the right not to commit yourself. They laid it all out, and most people refused to sign. They didn't want to come out and support
it. About 70%.
And you know
it was in the 60s.
Excuse me.
It was 60s, but it was about 70% said, no, we don't want those rights.
No.
Yeah, Terry, you know the study better than I do. I appreciate that.
Kid.
I don't remember the study. I studied the study.
That all makes the point that part of the design of our country was that the majority could not impose unfair actions upon the minority just because the majority had power.
The number's 202. We'd like to hear from you. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. Jeff, I wanted to ask you, because obviously while at the same time we recognize that minorities should have rights that majority shouldn't vote on, still it'd be nice if the majority of people in D.C., and after all they elect the representatives, the city council, are supportive of this issue. Are there any polls on the issue in the District of Columbia on whether people support marriage equality?
The only poll that I know of, and sadly I don't know the hard numbers, was done, I think, in 2007 by one of our – one of the polls I know of. In 2007 by one of our, actually, community partners, the Foundation for All Families. And they did do some polling that apparently really showed some favorable results in regards to sort of change of mindset and support of marriage equality in the District of Columbia, that really projected that we were moving in the direction – where more people in the District of Columbia were not opposed to marriage equality here. And so that has led us to believe, when we start talking about the question of, you know, why now, particularly when you look at the action of the City Council and what is just happening nationally, that we do anticipate to be in a much better position.
One of the things that Rick Rosenthal mentioned at the forum last night that I found interesting was that 3 years ago, a majority of people in the District of Columbia supported marriage equality, which I have to say surprised me. I was heartened to hear it, that 3 years ago a majority supported it. I would think the numbers have got to be higher now.
No, that's the expectation. When you look at just some of the demographic changes that have happened in the District of Columbia, and even if you just look, in many ways, I say, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a social scientist, but just you walk through our neighborhoods and even just – and we talk about nationally, and some of the folks are talking about just the impact that some of the major – you know, we're dealing with some major issues nationally. And so, you know, kind of when you start talking about marriage equality, it's like, okay, you know, I'm worried about healthcare. I'm worried about my job. I'm not really worried about what somebody else is doing. But then I think also when you start looking at the impact of the younger generation and younger voters that happened on this past election, and we know the polling shows that, you know, younger folks really, it's not an issue.
Right.
It is not an issue. And when I think, you know, when you look at the demographic shift that's happened in the District of Columbia, you know, that does, you know, look like it's moving in our favor.
And the thing I was going to say, and the thing to remember, what's even more important than that is the politicians realize that the younger voters aren't against it. And the politicians realize that the younger voters are becoming a very powerful bloc.
They are the
future.
So
now they're not just looking at the older conservative voters. They're looking at these younger people and saying, I don't want to offend them either. Not only are they a large bloc, but they're growing every year. They're turning 18 and the other end's dying off.
Right.
What is going to be your strategy, Jeff, with Virginia and Maryland? I mean, it's a D.C. issue that we're talking about here, but it's not really a D.C. issue because the metro area is obviously very much Virginia and Maryland as well.
As I recall, Maryland has taken some steps, right?
Well, Virginia actually, did they not, was it last year or 2 years ago, passed a law totally against
right,
it?
Right, right. Well, so Virginia's always behind the
Well, Virginia is dying to be part of Texas. That's their eventual
plan. We're not that bad. It's a resident of Virginia. Come on. We are purple. We're not red.
They're taking steps. They're taking steps.
We're getting there. We're Maryland, D.C. are, but we are way ahead of Texas. Please, Terry. you're attacking my home state.
I live there too, but that's what I'm saying, man. Those damn Texans. I'm sorry, anybody's from Texas.
And anyone in the Beltway, Alexandria, Arlington, Fairfax County, they're solidly blue. So it's just the rest of the state.
I think that, you know, definitely there has to, you know, outreach, you know, once we sort of, you know, begin to lay the foundation here in the District of Columbia, there definitely has to be some outreach within the metro area broadly, you know, at the same time. But I think, you know, some of that strategy, and I think this is where, you know, we have to continue to work with our elected officials on the city council, sort of looking at the timing and looking at those relationships as we, you know, talk about, work with, you know, looking at other legislators, you know, in the region and making sure those conversations, you know, are happening. And then also just, you know, as being, you know, a local representative within the Democratic Party, that we hopefully, you know, really have to try to use the Democratic Party also, you know, as a mantle and as an arm for garnering support when we look within the region.
And are you asking churches to help you? Because I know, for instance, as you probably know, you know, that, for instance, the Episcopal Church, you know, has gone through a big crisis about this, but that means there also are a whole lot of Episcopal congregations that are, in fact, very supportive of the gay community. And I know that's true in other churches as well. So since this does get into the religious equation, whether we want it to or not, are you trying to make contact with them and get them to help you guys?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I know, you know. You know, Councilmember Catania, when he, you know, had talked before, you know, as he's been talking about the potentially introducing legislation, and part of that, you know, and sort of laying the foundation has been reaching out to, you know, the community of faith. And I know, you know, that's part of the major strategy with Gertrude Stein Democratic Club, along with some of our partners, DC for Marriage, Foundation for All Families, will be major outreached to the faith community. And we do have, you know, more leaders within the local community than not who do support us and who are willing to, I think, stand up and be a vocal part, you know, of the movement.
And that's an important point to point out, is that a lot of people think that the faith community is universally hostile to marriage equality. That's not the case. That's not true at all. No,
it certainly isn't.
And I assume you're getting some of the people of faith who support marriage equality helping out in this regard.
Oh, definitely, definitely. We are actively working. There are actually a couple events that are in the work being planned, you know, public events in regards to talking about really faith in the LGBT community. Because, you know, outside of, you know, this particular, you know, the issue of marriage equality, there still has to be some work in regards to, you know, folks sort of understanding, you know, the connection, you know, and within faith, you know, being a person of faith within the LGBT community. And also there's a disconnect because folks, you know, have sort of been, as my personal opinion, sort of skewed, you know, whatever the spiritual religious belief may be, you know, being a person of coming out of the, you know, Christian faith. And that being my upbringing, you know, sometimes sort of the framework, you know, has been skewed in a different direction. And so we also have to do some work and dialogue amongst folks, you know, to understand and be able to, you know, to make that argument.
And we'd like to dialogue with you. Folks, you don't have to agree with anything any of the four of us are saying. We do want to hear from you. There's still time to take your calls at 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893.
And you will find as you go along and listen that you will agree more and more. There's no question of that.
Although, Terry, you and I, Garland, don't always agree.
Well,
so.
No, I can't solve. We can't solve that problem. You know, one problem at a time here, please.
I don't know about that.
Another question. Do you have, you mentioned some upcoming events. Can you name some of the events? And do you have a website that people can go to?
Yes, there are several. On the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club website, steindemocrats.org. Steindemocrats.org, the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club website, starting tomorrow, we'll have a listing. I mentioned the Ward Democratic Organization. District of Columbia has eight Ward Democratic Organizations, one in each ward. And beginning this month, every ward will be having a discussion on marriage equality, and where they will be a resolution in support of marriage equality being introduced, and also that calls on the city council to enact legislation and calls on the mayor to sign it. And so we will have a schedule of those dates that will be up on our website starting tomorrow. So steindemocrats.org. Also, I want to announce the Pride at Work of the AFL-CIO, which is another amazing community partner that's been doing amazing work with the labor community in regards to building support for the LGBT community. We'll be having their members meeting, and I believe it's April 29th. You can go to Pride at Work. You can find them on Facebook. You can find them on their website. Just Google Pride at Work. But I think it's April 29th. I think it'll be at the AFL-CIO headquarters, and they will be having the discussion on marriage equality in District of Columbia and what the labor community can do to support. Also, I'll mention that there's a great citywide campaign that's moving called DC for Marriage. That's initiative of the DC Center, and they're going citywide with the I Do Pledge. You know, if you support marriage equality in District of Columbia, if you support equality, if you support the District of Columbia having self-determination, you can go and you can sign the I Do, I think it's I Do in DC Pledge, and those pledge cards will be going citywide. And really using that as a tool for folks to begin to start conversations, you know, within their family, their local communities, and taking those pledge cards. So those are a couple. SteinDemocrats.org, Pride at Work with AFL-CIO, DC and DC for Marriage.
And that's important because that means that listeners can actually play their part in making history. You know, I've always felt I unlike Terry, I'm too young to have participated in the civil rights era of the 1960s. I give you credit for being around at that time. But you still can participate in the current civil rights movement of this generation. And it's interesting because anybody can go to their wards, right, and speak up.
Yes, anybody can go to a ward Democratic organization to speak up. Any registered Democrat in all eight wards except for Ward 3, because they have a different system. They have a delegate system. That's another story. all eight wards except for Ward 3, which meets this Thursday, can go to your ward and you can speak up. And we're asking you to come out. We're asking you to come and show your presence in the community. Let your neighbors know that, you know, I am here. I live in this community and I am asking for your support and to acknowledge my existence and acknowledge my relationships. So we really need it. But part of the thing is also the members of the ward Democratic organizations are the activist hub of the District of Columbia. And these are the folks that we're going to need. If we have to defend a citywide campaign, these are the folks that we're going to need on our side. And so it's good to start the conversation with them early.
We've got three callers on the line. I want to try to get to each of you before we finish. Betsy, please make it quick, but tell us your views.
Hi, Mark. This is Betsy from Texas, and
she's one of my regular listeners. She's good. Don't pick on Betsy.
I'm
love Betsy.
I'm not really from Texas. I just live here.
Okay.
I am straight, and I am divorced. And I was given all kinds of protection through the divorce process with the splitting of assets and with custody of our son and all of these kinds of issues. And I don't see any reason why a straight couple that gets divorced after 12 years of whatever together contract they have should not have the same rights and the same protections that I had.
Betsy, thank you very much for your call. And she makes a very important point. You know, the protections of marriage are actually not just for marriage.
Right.
They're a protection in the event that nobody wants to talk about, but in the event of divorce. And it's something I really hadn't thought about. And Betsy, that's why I love when you call. You bring up these very important points. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to Kent, I think is the name. Kent, welcome to the show.
Oh, how's it going, guys? Good dialogue again, once again tonight. Actually, I guess coming at it from a different perspective, and and kind of don't play the devil's advocate. I get the whole thing with the gay marriage, the marriage equality, as far as from the civic perspective. But I guess the fear from a lot of, and I'll even say us, because some of us have a fear that there was actually one of the other goals that's being played out here. A normalization of, or a forced normalization of the philosophy and the perspective as far as the normalization of I guess homosexual behavior or homosexuality, I guess.
Okay, I get your point, Kent. We don't have a lot of time, so I want to just focus your question here to Jeff. I think what Kent's pointing out is that people who oppose marriage equality say that if you support marriage equality, you're effectively approving of gay people's lives. And that it sounds like Kent, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but we don't have a lot of time. Kent, or at least people like him, don't approve of gay people's lives, so they don't want allow marriage equality because they believe, let's face it, the homosexuality is a sin. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to people who believe that?
The reality is that I can't argue with your belief, and I think that with that belief, if someone stands upon that, and I think oftentimes it's that personal relationship that may be most impactful with that person, but really comes down to, again, equality and rights and human rights. And the fact that if you feel as the sort of separate but equal, again, if you feel as though it's fine for you to impact upon my life and inhibit, my rights and benefits based upon your belief, then how does that stand? Does the same stand for you? Does the same stand for you? Do I have the right to, impact upon your life?
To tell someone else who to marry.
To tell someone else, you who you can and cannot marry within any way, shape, or form, how you would define that, because I disagree with that, because that's in my core belief. And so I think, really it's that core, hitting at that, sort of core belief about equality and fairness.
And no one should forget that 50 years ago in many states in the country,
I was about to say that.
Yeah, blacks and whites couldn't marry people thought it was wrong. It was a sin. Miscegenation, they called it, mixing of the races.
Let me insert real quickly here, too, just because so much of the opposition does come from the Christian right. And having done a little bit of study, if those Christians who are concerned about it, and I know Muslims have concerns about it as well, but if they read about the miracle, the so-called miracle in the New Testament with Christ, curing the slave of the centurion, if you're familiar with that story. If you get into the Greek actual translation of the word, it's not a Greek word for slave. It is a Greek word for a boy. And being a Roman centurion and legionnaire, the custom, a very common custom at that time, was that this centurion would have as his lover this young man. And this was a common practice, and the context of Christ curing in that particular miracle very, very, very clearly extends to a homosexual relationship.
Jesus hung out with lepers. He hung out with all of the low, with prostitutes, with people who've been cast out.
And if you're Muslim, Jesus is considered a prophet, so, there
again. And, here's the other issue, too. The issue of quote normalization. It's like when people say, should there be gays in the military? There's always been gays in the military.
let's not acknowledge that they're there.
Issue when you get to that is pretending. It's like when Ahmadinejad said, well, we don't have gays in our country. So the idea of normalization is not really an idea of saying whether or not it's normal. It's saying, will we acknowledge something that always existed, that in fact is a fairly normal part of society? Mm-hmm. We can pretend it's not a normal part of society and say it's wrong to stop pretending.
Great point. We got one last caller. Make it quick. Andrew, go ahead.
Hi. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Yep. Me, myself, being bisexual and raised on Catholic belief, it's always been my thought that marriage is between man and woman. And the battle over gay marriage is something that I personally don't approve of, but I am supportive of state marriage.
So you would support the right to have civil rights, to have civil marriage under the law. You just wouldn't support it in your own church.
No, I think he says he supports individual states being married to each other.
No, I don't. We're running out of time. No time for that joke.
Garland.
Actually, Andrew, did I get your point right? Did we lose Andrew?
We don't.
Are you saying that you support the state allowing gay couples to marry? You just don't support it in your church? Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm supporting is the idea of what seems to be the legal issues of marriage. Or it seems like what most gays want is that protection of when something happens to their partner.
They can get
the rights to burial things, financial things of that nature, and it seems like it's being clouded by the idea of marriage itself.
I hear what you're saying. Thank you for your call, Andrew. We don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to just wrap up by saying that no question that separate but equal is better than unequal. You know, Jim Crow was better than slavery. It is better to have...
Not really.
Well,
but
a little bit better. No, a little bit better.
Check your history
right.
there.
It's better to be second-class citizens than no citizens. My point is this. I'm sure that gay couples welcome any rights they have. But until you have full equality, I think the answer is separate but equal is inherently unequal. I think that's a lesson we've learned from the civil rights era. And unfortunately, civil unions aren't recognized by the federal government as marriage. They're not recognized by other states. They just don't do it. They're a good thing compared to what otherwise existed, but I don't think they go far enough. I want to thank everyone very much for coming here. First, I very much want to thank Jeff Richardson. He is the president of the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club. Thank you for coming here on Dialogue. Garland, tell them about your radio show, The Edge.
The Edge on WRYR in Southern Maryland. And I will be this Saturday on XM Sirius, 1:30, POTUS. It's the new school.
And Terry, what are you up to?
It's actually, just to make a correction, it's Terry D. Kester, D standing for the Doctor of Democracy. You shouldn't forget that. What's at Stake is coming up.
He's just mad because I said he's older. He's still giving me, you know. Go ahead, Terry.
What's at Stake is coming up, which is on Wednesday at 10 a.m. And then it's and also, we've got the announcement right here before us. You know, this show is now official on, starting with May, every week, this is the way it's going to be. It's us, if you can stand it.
If you like us, please come back every Tuesday at 7 o'clock. I'm Mark Levine. I'm host of the Inside Scoop. You can catch my show every day at RadioInsideScoop.com or MarkLevineRadio.com. I also have a TV show in the local area. Make sure you don't miss that. If you do miss it, it's all on my website. But I hope you've enjoyed Dialogue each and every week. Garland and Terry and I are back to discuss another issue of the week. And thank you very much for taking your time to listen to us.
And to collaborate to solve our problems. Participatory democracy is not just insider talk about or among winners. To be part of a genuine democracy, we all must be encouraged actively to partake in its conversation.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next Tuesday at 7 for another edition of Dialogue.
WPFW welcomes your feedback, favorable or otherwise, on this just concluded public affairs program. To do so, simply email your comments to info@wpfw.org. That's info@wpfw.org. Thanks.
WPFW, Washington.